Welcome to What's Eric Eating? Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map editor Eric Sandler. This is a show where I have a conversation with someone in the food world I think you'll want to hear from. He is the director of operations for Fat Eatery, which has a location in Katy that's very soon about to be joined by a location in the Woodlands. Kevin Lee, welcome to the show. How are you?
Very good. It's a beautiful Monday, hot, humid, and, you know, nothing new to Houston, but it is getting a little bit warmer.
Absolutely. Thanks for doing this. Look, I mean, we have a lot to talk about. Obviously, you know, hanging over this conversation is the death of Chef Alex R. Young, the founder of Fat Eatery. And I want to talk about Alex, but, you know, we had a whole show with memories of Alex. So before we get to that, let's talk about you.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about your career prior to joining Fat Eatery. What were some of the restaurants you worked at, and how did you kind of make your way to Fat Eatery?
Yeah. So growing up, I was a part of a number of sushi restaurants. I embedded myself into the culinary journey with Japanese food. I originally started out with the Uptown Sushi Group. They had a restaurant out in the west side of town called Bluefin Sushi. That was going to be their sister concept, and that was going to be closer towards in the west side of town off of Kirkwood and Westheimer area, where the new WOW district is at. So I started with them for a little while, and then soon enough, I kind of wanted to do a little bit better and try to, you know, challenge myself a little more. So I actually joined the Azuma Group. So I started with the Azuma Group, and then that kind of evolved into opening up Soma Sushi off of Washington and Shepherd. And then from there, my last place with them was Azuma on the lake out in Sugarland area. And I was with them for a little while, opened that one from ground up. And after that, I kind of stumbled upon Alex. We crossed paths many years ago. I've actually known him for over 20 years. But I came across him again in the Sugarland area where he resides at. And he actually put me on the map. I actually did restaurant consulting for a few years through the connections of him as well, too. So he definitely helped me out through my career as I was going from transitioning from restaurants to other mom and pop restaurants. But those are probably the most two popular ones in Houston that would stick out the most.
All right. So you had this existing relationship with Alex. How did you come to be part of Fat Eatery? Did you come to him or did he come to you?
He actually reached out to me. So with some of the restaurants that he actually gave me consulting gigs to, he told me he had a crazy idea one day, and he was like, I need to pick your brain. I need to figure out a name for this restaurant. And then sure enough, he didn't really give me too many details, but he was telling me, hey, it's going to be in Katy, and I'm trying to figure out an idea. So I think it was a little bit over 2.5 weeks. We're sitting there trying to figure out a name for this upcoming restaurant of his. And then lo and behold, it actually ended up being Fat Eatery. But we were sitting there thinking from names from Bamboo House, China, Garden Express, or I mean, you could name
something,
it.
Something with panda, you know, panda yeah. Always comes up.
Yes, you know, it's something weird and quirky, but you know, we try to not say Chinese in anything because we didn't want to be, stapled down to just limiting our menu to only Chinese food. So then we are a blend of Southeast Asian food.
Right. You didn't want people coming in looking for beef with broccoli and General Tso's chicken.
Oh yeah, you know, and we still have those people till this day. They'll walk in and be like, "How come you don't have egg rolls on your menu or gyoza or something like that?" So it's nothing short but amazing. People somehow have a common misconception: all Asian food is all the same. But you know, we specialize in Southeast Asian food.
Yeah, I mean, I think what was so clever about describing it as Malaysian is that mm-hmm. there's so many different cultures that intersect in Malaysia that you could basically do whatever you want.
Yeah, definitely. And that's the fun part with our menu. We can really put one spectrum and all the way to the other side of the spectrum as well, too. So that's always a good thing because our menu is not limited to just one specific, city or region or stuff like that.
So then you've been involved from the very beginning.
Yes, very beginning.
So just talk to me about kind of those early days of Fat Eatery. Like, when did you start to feel like, you know, Alex came to you. He's like, I have this crazy idea. When did you start to feel like it was working?
When our wait time got up to 2.5 hours and people were still waiting.
That's a good time. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was a very scary time because there's nothing worse than standing in front of a soccer mom or a family telling them it's a 2-hour wait. And, you know, they drove halfway across town to try this food.
All right. So tell me a little bit about kind of the concept's evolution, right? Because you've always had the roti and the beef mm-hmm. and the beef rendang, right? There's always been kind of that core, but But talk to me a little bit about kind of how you and Alex and Marvin kind of began to expand on this concept, right? Because you've tried stuff over the years, you've added room to the kitchen, you had the sandwich shop for a little bit, but so you've kind of as you've kind of gotten dialed in, like what were some of the things that you sort of added as you went along?
You know, I don't, I think we've added and we try to evolve with the Katie community because we had such a broad menu with Malaysian classics. And then after a while, we realized that some of these classic dishes were not as popular, but they are very, very much well known in Malaysia and Indonesia and stuff like that. So we had to kind of cater our menu to the Katie community because not everyone's going to be familiar with something called like a bak kut teh or some other traditional Malaysian dishes. So as we went on, we would kind of pick and choose some of our best sellers and some options that were not really as popular to some people because not everyone's going to sit there and say, "Hey, I definitely want a pork trotter soup with Chinese herbs in it and stuff like that." Because
Right.
it's not for everybody. So after a little while, we did have to kind of scale back on some of the more traditional items and then kind of get some crab favorites, something like our sizzling black pepper beef. That's not really a Malaysian dish, but it's more of a Southeast Asian dish that it's very familiar with a lot of people. And we have everything on the menu where you're going to be able to find something that you're comfortable or familiar with.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when you guys rolled out the dim sum and you were doing the shumai and the haigao and the pork buns, and it's like, I don't know enough about Malaysian food to say whether this is or isn't Malaysian. But I know that Alex like lived and worked in Hong Kong for so long that he knew that cuisine so well that it just kind of made sense. And this is also sort of pre like dim sum box at Tim Ho Wan, right? Like there wasn't the same
Definitely.
dim sum
There
options
was
in Katy,
nothing.
so you were kind of bringing something that the neighborhood didn't have.
Yeah, it was cool because, Marvin specializes, he's a really good cook and he's the one that actually initiated all this dim sum. And he's like, "Hey, you know what? I feel like we're tapping out our menu. We should do something cool and funky." And for most people that know Alex, he's always doing something completely off the wall. Like during holiday hours, we're doing beef Wellingtons, stuff like that that you really don't think that would be something that would be popular in Katy. But we always wanted to just kind of push the bar and challenge ourselves and try to do something different. So dim sum was definitely a heavy hitter for us, and it was a great Hong Kong classic. And then to bring that to the Katy community definitely worked out in our best interest.
Yeah, so I guess let's move on to the Woodlands. I mean, tell me about kind of where you are in that process and kind of when do you think we're going to be eating there?
The million-dollar question is when we're opening. Besides the fact that a few weeks ago when we had that nasty storm back to back, I had a 35-foot tree fall on top of our roof, which definitely delayed everything. And it's been a crazy time. So if I could give you a definite time, I definitely wish I could. But now I am literally looking up at our roof as we speak and trying to figure out when those guys are coming out to patch this hole because the first storm, we had that tree to deal with, and then I thought our roof was okay. And of course, the second round of storms blew everything sideways, and we definitely have a lot of leaks now. So it's nothing short but obstacles and hurdles that we've been dealing with.
But you think this summer, probably.
Yes. I wish I could give you a specific date, but it's going to be a little bit harder than that.
No, no,
And
no.
but
I didn't expect to come out of this interview with a specific date, but I guess what I mean is kind of where are you in the process? Because it was announced, it's been a couple of years since you made the announcement, and there was all this enthusiasm, and now I think people are sort of ready for you, and they
They're
just
too
kind of want to
ready.
know, yeah, where are you in the process? Like, talk to me, because you took over a Fuddruckers, right? So I
Yes,
assume you had quite a bit of
8,200
work to
square
do.
feet. For sure. I can confidently say I am 92% of the way there.
What's left to do, other than patching the holes in the roof?
We are starting training. So we actually have in-house staff that we are training, and then our training process is pretty rigorous just because I'm pretty stern on allergens and allergies, and then this new gluten-free thing is kind of one thing that's kind of evolved over the past year. So we are very, very much in our training process, and we are almost at the finish line. So with that, I mean, I think I have everything kind of set up accordingly, but then there's small little hiccups here and there. Just like the tree that I never anticipated, but I'm really close to the finish line.
And then talk about the menu a little bit, because I know part of Alex's vision was kind of building on what Fat Eatery does. So what can we expect?
For sure. So, in all honesty, the first few months, we're going to be running a limited menu just to kind of get our feet wet and just make sure all of our machinery is all in line and firing as it should. A lot of the stuff we all had custom made to specifically to this restaurant. And so we have to just make sure everything's up and running correctly. So I'd say confidently the first few months will definitely be a draft menu. So we'll have a lot of the classics that we already have in our Katy location, but stuff like our handcrafted dim sum and the Chinese barbecue that Alex promised everyone. We still have all that stuff in our cookbooks and ready to go. But in the beginning, it will be a draft menu so we can just kind of get our feet wet and get acclimated to the women's community.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, we sort of talked about you coming on board, but I always sort of pictured Alex as the culinary mind. So,
oh yeah,
you know, with his passing, who's taking the lead on the culinary side? Like, who's going to be responsible for creating new menu items and executing dishes and all of that stuff?
Yeah, I would definitely say confidently that's a conversation Marvin and I have always been talking about. He's always been the one that says, Kevin, Marvin, I want to be Wellington and I want it to happen. Go ahead and do whatever you need to do. And the good thing about working with Alex is he's very open about letting us do what we need to do and try different recipes. So even when the Beef Wellington came out, Marvin took the reins on that. He did an excellent job on that. And so a lot of the cool ideas that he came up with, we executed ourselves. So it's really good that he gives us that opportunity to kind of be ourselves and try everything. And that's why a lot of our successful menu items are worked very, very, very well because Marvin and I definitely execute his vision and he just kind of tells us how crazy he wants to get. Just like the past few years we've been doing crawfish. Unfortunately, this year, with the prices being a little bit higher, we didn't have a chance to do it this year. But literally, we're trying to push the bar every year to outdo ourselves from the past years.
So for people who may be wondering a little bit about, you know, who's creating the food now that Alex has passed. Mm-hmm. What you're saying is you and Marvin, you have his playbook and you understand the vision well enough, not only to sort of sustain it, but also to evolve it.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely scale it. That's one thing that we've always been priding ourselves on just because we want to think outside the box. Not very many restaurants will have the opportunity or the budget to do a lot of this cool experiments. You know, even something as quirky as during the Super Bowl, we did our, you know, Malaysian inspired chicken wings. And those are really, really cool, really different. They're a huge hit. But then it's always fun just to play around with these recipes. So we definitely have a lot of tricks up our sleeves and we're just waiting to kind of roll them out whenever the time is right.
And so let me just sort of ask you kind of more generally, I mean, what has life at Fat Eatery been like since Alex passed away? I mean, I mean, obviously you were much more aware of it than I was. It caught me completely off guard. So you had maybe time mentally to sort of prepare yourself a little bit, but I mean, talk to me about what it's been like at the restaurant these last couple of months.
Man, there's probably one question I wasn't expecting. I was reciting all the basic questions and listening to some of the other podcasts, but this one's going to throw me for a doozy. I'm getting a little teary-eyed just thinking about it, but it's been a lot less quiet. And when I say quiet, he's always at the restaurant. The past few months before his passing, the staff did have an inkling feeling that something was not right because he was married to this restaurant. His vision, his brand and everything that he's worked so hard for. If we didn't see him for more than a day, it would be something really, really weird. When we didn't see him for a day, maybe he was out with his family, hanging out with Queenie and his kids. But typically anything over 2 or 3 days, the staff definitely had a kind of a odd feeling and he did want to keep everything a secret, but it has been quiet just because, we miss his laughter, his voice, you know, and then he does crack a pretty hard whip. And, you know, I appreciate that because everyone does need to stay in line. And the reason why we are so successful is because he was always there pushing us to be better, do better. And in return, everyone made more money, you know, and I tell people money is not everything, but you know, it surely makes life a lot easier.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that should have been, you know, looking back on it, that should have been my inkling that something had changed because, you know, I saw you guys at Truffle Masters and Alex wasn't there and usually he would have been, right? He would have been,
yep.
Oh, you know, 1,000%. Handing out.
He wouldn't miss that. He wouldn't. Yeah.
Yeah. That's when, like, looking back on it, that should have been my clue that something was going on. I mean, talk about that legacy. Cause I'm, you know, more than anything, I think people, you know, remember his sort of involvement with the community and his commitment to charities and all that stuff. So kind of, do you see that as kind of a core part of what it means to be leading Fat Eatery, or how do you sort of plan to maintain that?
Yeah, I mean, so I've picked up a lot of things working with him throughout the years, and there's nothing short of amazing things whenever his name does come up. He's always giving back to the community. Even when we're Texas Restaurant Association, whenever we won our prizes, we donated all the money back, all the proceeds back to Texas Restaurant Association. So we're always kind of helping each other, because this industry, as big as it is, it's very small at the same token. So we always want to take care of our people, you know, and he's always trying to make sure that everyone's taken care of, even during the holidays, when we're doing Christmas and we're busy ourselves. But then he wanted to make sure that, hey, all the chefs in town, he sent out beef Wellingtons to everybody. I don't know how many Uber orders we had, but we literally used Uber's carrier service, and we literally threw in beef Wellingtons into a car and sent them out to some amazing people in town. And definitely stuff like that is stuff that I know a lot of people are going to miss. I'm going to try to carry on that myself. But it's just so many people that he took care of. And I wish I had this little black book of his that we could kind of carry that on. But it will be a little bit different upcoming years. But I can guarantee you, if you bring up his name, there's always going to be a smile following up with that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, you have to be kind of the outlet for customers and other people in the food community. I mean, I'm sure you must have a lot of conversations with people.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of conversations from, you know, how long has this been going on? How come he didn't tell anybody? You know, the question always comes up, and especially during the last few events that we were a part of, when we didn't have Alex present, we really had to be very careful how we worded, you know, his absence at these events.
Right. So, I mean, are you adjusting, how do you feel?
You know, Marvin and I are usually really, really strong, just because we have absolutely no downtime with the Woodlands going on and everything. We have to keep a straight face and make sure that we don't let down our team. You know, a lot of people rely on their jobs and this opportunity that Alex has, you know, blessed us with. So we have to keep this engine going and keeping this vision alive across the board. But if you ask us honestly if we're okay, I mean, it's really hard to answer that. You know, so just the other day we were loading up for the Food and Wine Week here in the Woodlands, and that was just this past Saturday. And we were in storage, and we were just emptying out some stuff from our storage for the catering. And we came across his wheelchair. And it was just like, oh, Jesus, you know, we still remember those times where we were wheeling him into his radiation and chemo and stuff like that. So small stuff like that will always kind of trigger these memories with him, or we'll run into something that he cherished, you know, anything from his favorite apron or his favorite cleaver and stuff like that. So small stuff like that will kind of trigger us, but then for the most part we have accepted it, and we understand, you know, this is not something that came out of the blue, thank God. But you know, we just have to stay strong and just keep this memory alive and keep his legacy alive.
Yeah, so you know, you mentioned that you were at Wine and Food Week in the Woodlands mm-hmm. over the weekend. You know, as you're sort of interacting with people in the Woodlands, what would you say is kind of the response you're getting from them? I mean, what is the level of interest in this restaurant opening, and you know, what's the level of excitement in the community?
I will put it this way. Marvin and I have been here secretly inside the building working and fixing things and setting up things. And it came to a point where I had to mask up all of our doors. And then now it's even to the point where I have to put a close sign on the front just to deter people from yanking at the door. And it's kind of scary sometimes, because sometimes we'll run out to our cars and we'll forget to lock the front door, and we're underneath a shelf, you know, attaching some racks or something like that. And then next thing you know, you have 15 people in front of you saying, "Are you open?" Which is the scary part. So I think we're on a good pace here. It's been a little bit scary, but I know a lot of people are anxious, and I know that it's been a long time. But I hope that the community understands that, you know, we did take over a 40-year-old building that has not really seen a lot of maintenance and stuff like that in the past few years. So we're trying to make sure everything's up to par, up to code. So that's what took the longest time, was just getting everything back up to code and redoing a lot of plumbing and stuff like that.
Well, you know, I mean, the other thing is, you know, Fat Eatery opened and nobody really knew what it was, or you know, maybe in certain segments of the community, people knew Alex, but certainly like the broader media didn't know Alex. You know, it was this It was this like delightful surprise to go out to Katy and to eat this food and to just get excited about it. You're not going to get that this time, right? You got to be
I got to be sharp.
Firing on point from day one. You're not going to sneak up on anybody this time.
Yeah, in the beginning it was very interesting because we knew everyone that walked through the door wasn't really familiar with Malaysian food. Now that we're 6 years in, and then all of a sudden everyone is pretty familiar for the followers that we have and our gracious guests that always come through, they're very familiar with it now. And now they're like, "Oh, you're coming into our neighborhood? Oh, we're waiting, we're ready," you know. So they're clawing at the door for sure.
I mean, you know, not to be too blunt, but you can't fuck this up. I mean, you gotta come correct.
I was hoping that I could cuss on this, but yes, I'm fucking terrified. I'm terrified because we have one shot and I have a mob of people at the door that I know is gonna almost just come pouring in the second we say we're open. So that's the scary part.
But I do think the one thing that will help you is that there's got to be such tremendous goodwill. There was so much affection for Alex that, you know, I think people will be, they'll be patient with you, but only for a little bit, like only like for the very beginning. And then they're going to be like, "Look, you got to, sorry about everything that happened to you, but you know, these roti are just not flaky enough, right? Like this curry's not spicy enough. You gotta figure it out."
Exactly. And it's going to be a whole nother relaunch, you know, just like when you came to visit us, when we first opened, there's going to be a lot of answers to answer to, or a lot of questions, answers, and, just trying to get this all settled and get people acclimated and then just serve the community.
And then, I mean, not to get too far ahead because you haven't even opened the second location yet, but, mm-hmm. you know, do you have a vision for how you'd like to grow this restaurant? I mean, was the vision sort of two and done, or do you have a sense that, you know, if you do this right, like maybe there could be a third or a fourth down the road?
We are already looking outside of Texas, if you kind of catch my drift, but we're definitely looking at multiple locations. And I definitely want to focus on something in the inner loop because Alex promised everyone a shop inside the inner loop as well too.
Yeah. That like 2 months or whatever that you were at the Ghost Kitchen in Third Ward. Yeah. I mean, I probably ordered those dumplings like six times, like, you know, like I was, and I understand you walked away from that facility for all kinds of good reasons, but yes, mm-hmm. we inner loopers want you inside the loop at some point.
Yeah. And the main hurdle with inner loop, and I think a lot of other restaurateurs in town can agree on, is just the parking. You know, we have a lot of people coming in from other states and moving here and settling down. And it seems like parking is the number one hurdle that we're running into.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things. You just kind of, you know, you accept valet or you walk or you whatever. But yeah, or you wind up in one of these big mixed use developments. I guess that's the other solution.
Yep. And no one wants to walk in Houston. If you told me I had to park two blocks away to get into the restaurant, good luck. I'm not doing it.
Well, it's very hot here. You know, I think that's
hot. It's humid.
It's very, and you know, especially if you're a nicer place and people get dressed up, especially women in heels, right? They, you know, those shoes are not designed for long walks.
Oh yeah, and then these monster potholes that we have in Houston—that's not going to add any more enjoyment into the walk to the restaurant.
You've covered a lot of ground. Frankly, mm-hmm. you talk pretty fast, so you've covered the ground more quickly than maybe I anticipated. But give me one good Alex story, just one like happy, funny memory that has been sustaining you as you've been sort of adapting to life without him.
You know what? Definitely his last few days with us, he was still very much energetic. The best stories I can tell you is one day he'll wake up and he says, "Kevin, I would go sing karaoke." He was a huge Frank Sinatra guy. He loved singing My Way. And we were just so thrown off because he would be like, "Hey, it's 4 o'clock. Let's go karaoke." And I'm like, "Where in Houston can I karaoke at 4 o'clock? So we found a place in the southwest side of town that finally allowed us to open up one of their VIP rooms. And they don't open till 9. And we were like, "How much is it to open at 4? They're like, "We're not open at 4. And I was like, "How much is it to open and sing?" They're like, "We're not open." I was like, here's $1,000.
Yeah, here's here's $1,000. Let me in.
Yes, it was Marvin and I and him, and we sang for like 5 hours. And I think my eyeballs crossed at 8 o'clock, and we stayed there till 2 a.m. So that will definitely, and I can guarantee you, if you ask anybody about him in karaoke, he was a karaoke fanatic.
All right. Well, that's a great way to wrap this up. You know, thank you for doing this. I'm excited to see you in the Woodlands. I'm excited to see you kind of bring this grander vision of Fat Eatery to life, and hopefully soon.
Yes, definitely. Very, very soon. And I can't wait to serve the Woodlands community and then definitely have you out here as well, too. We'll have a little powwow and, get together and have some good food.
Kevin, give us the website and the social media for Fat Eatery.
Yes, very simple. It's going to be Fat Eatery with a P. So it's going to be phateatery.com. Our IG handle is the exact same thing as well, too. It's just going to be Fat Eatery with a P.
Kevin, thanks so much.
Hey, thank you very much for having me.
You can follow me on Instagram at Eric Sandler. Keep it locked on culturemap.com for all the latest Houston bar and restaurant news. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next week.